This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take 4 of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
On February 7th in Tehran, a significant event unfolded as the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, engaged with Air Force personnel in a heartfelt meeting to reaffirm their allegiance on the 46th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. This gathering took place just hours after U.S. President Donald Trump took a brazen step by signing an order to reimpose his maximum pressure strategy against Iran. During the meeting, the leader of the revolution made a compelling case against negotiations with the U.S., stating that they would not resolve Iran's pressing issues. He reflected on the 2015 experience when Iran, along with six other nations, including the U.S., reached an agreement through two arduous years of negotiations, the now-defunct Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. He pointed out that this hard-won accord was ultimately cast aside by Trump in 2018, underscoring a troubling pattern. Even under President Obama, who initially embraced the agreement, compliance was shaky at best. With such historical context, the leader asserted that seeking to renegotiate with the U.S. is both unwise and undignified, given America's reputation for failing to uphold its commitments. In a charged atmosphere, the leader's words reflected a determination to stand firm in the face of external pressures. The leader of the Islamic Revolution's statements once again underscore that Tehran's approach to the United States is not fueled by optimism or a hope for a change in the White House's stance. Instead, it is firmly grounded in the hard lessons learned from the costly negotiations of the 2010s. His declaration that negotiating with the U.S. is neither wise, intelligent, nor honorable sends a powerful message to those who still cling to the belief that diplomacy can secure national interests without acknowledging the balance of power. This is Mr. Ruhollah Modabber, an Iranian expert specializing in international affairs.
افرادی که فکر میکردن و ساده انگارانه نگاه میکردن به مسئله آمریکا.
The individuals who naively perceived the Americans made a significant error by consistently positioning themselves from a standpoint of weakness. They transmitted a message of vulnerability to the Americans. The American diplomatic approach has always been to attack first and then negotiate. When you behave with fear, greed, and an unimaginable eagerness in front of the Americans, they definitely do not move towards negotiating with you. Instead, they seek to assert their power. This has been the lesson we have learned from engaging in talks with the U.S., and undoubtedly, the outcome has contradicted our national interests. I say this because, step by step, the demands of the Americans have increased.
The U.S. policy towards Iran took a decisive turn during Donald Trump's first term, and it has been revitalized under his current presidency. On February 3rd, Trump signed a new presidential national security memorandum, signaling a renewed push for economic and political pressure against the Islamic Republic. Interestingly, the maximum pressure campaign never really faded after Trump left office. The Biden administration not only kept the existing sanctions in place, but also introduced hundreds more, effectively continuing the strategy of economic isolation. We also had the opportunity to speak with Mr. Mohammad Hassan Qadiri Abiyane, a former Iranian diplomat who had represented Iran as ambassador in Australia and Mexico.
Experience shows that whether during the Democratic or Republican administrations, whenever the U.S. made promises or accepted commitments, they acted contrary to those assurances. They have never fulfilled their promises. Europe has followed the same path. Unfortunately, it is under the influence of the U.S., lacking independence in truth, and it plays on the same field as the U.S. against Iran and other independent countries. After 2 years of negotiations with the U.S. led by Dr. Zarif, who made numerous commitments, it is truly regrettable. He secured minimal promises from the U.S., which they failed to honor. They did not fulfill their commitments during Obama's administration, nor during Trump's presidency, nor during Biden's term either. However, we should not assume that all Republicans behave like Trump. Trump likes to portray himself as unpredictable and crazy. We acknowledge that he is indeed crazy. Well, we do not negotiate with a crazy.
The roots of this tension trace back to 2018 when the Trump administration made a controversial exit from the nuclear deal, a decision deemed unilateral and illegal, especially since it had the backing of the UN Security Council. In doing so, the U.S. reinstated sanctions that had been lifted under the accord and intensified the economic squeeze on Iran, despite the fact that the International Atomic Energy Agency confirmed Iran's full compliance with the agreement.
In my view, negotiations between Iran and the United States have never been a good experience. This is because the American side does not approach negotiations with a sense of equality towards Iran. We witnessed in the 2010s that those who believed the United States was the leader of the world and that we should engage in talks with the Americans spent nearly 2 years, both indirectly and directly, walking alongside John Kerry, standing next to the American flag, smiling and taking commemorative photos. Their affiliated media exaggerated this as a significant victory. However, in practice, there were no benefits gained. The Americans' approach is not only dismissive towards Iran, but also characterized by an extremely high standpoint towards the rest of the international system. Today, we see how the Americans treat Canada as if it were their 51st state, insisting that Canada must join their territory, or how they discuss Greenland's integration into the U.S., among other similar instances.
Over the past 4 years, there have been numerous attempts to revive the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. However, while Washington expressed a willingness to return to the table, it consistently fell short of upholding its commitments or lifting sanctions. Various excuses have been used to stall negotiations, preventing any meaningful progress. Our conversation included Mr. Masoud Akbari, an Iranian journalist currently writing for Kayhan newspaper.
بعضی از جریان ها مطرح بکنن که ما برای بحث لغو تحریم ها باید با آمریکا مذاکره کنیم.
Some suggest that we need to negotiate with the U.S. regarding the lifting of sanctions, but we know that the U.S. behaves however it pleases in such negotiations and does not adhere to the norms of logic and international law. A few days ago, Mr. Trump explicitly declared that he wants us to practically destroy our entire defense capacity, which is far from wisdom. Making negotiations under these circumstances is meaningless. The U.S. is accustomed to dictating certain terms to its negotiating partners and extracting one-sided concessions, a reflection of the imperialistic nature of Americans.
In this tense atmosphere, former Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif voices frustrations in 2019, questioning the sincerity of negotiations with Trump. He remarked, "Is it possible to negotiate with Trump? Hours were spent negotiating every word of the JCPOA. Then Mr. Trump comes and in a moment signs something, saying it's all void. Is this anything but a publicity stunt? Can you show that negotiating with you is worth a person's time?"
Those who were involved in the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA, including Mr. Rouhani and Mr. Zarif, have themselves spoken about the unreliability of the U.S. For instance, Mr. Rouhani stated in a discussion about U.S. negotiations with East Asian countries, "Are countries crazy enough to negotiate with you? You're not loyal to your recent promises, and you're not even adhering to the agreement that the United Nations has confirmed." Similarly, Mr. Zarif remarked, "A deal with the U.S. is worth no more than the ink on paper." Other members of the negotiating team for the JCPOA have made similar statements regarding the U.S.'s breach of promises and the fact that we gained nothing from negotiations with them.
The history of U.S.-Iran relations paints a clear picture that the U.S. has never honored its commitments and has consistently treated negotiations as a mere tactic to exert pressure and further its own hegemonic agenda. Key historical events such as the 1953 coup, the Algiers Accords, the McFarland negotiations, the Saadat talks, and particularly the JCPOA, illustrate a troubling pattern. Each time Tehran takes a conciliatory step back, Washington not only fails to uphold its promises, but also escalates its pressure on Iran. The history of American aggression towards Iran runs deep, starting with a CIA-orchestrated coup in 1953 that toppled the democratically elected government of Mohammad Mossadegh. This pivotal event paved the way for the reinstatement of Mohammad Reza Shah, a tyrannical ruler who tightly gripped power for years. Quite recently, Iran's leadership has called negotiating with the U.S. not intelligent, nor wise, nor honorable. Could you please tell us why, and would you please elaborate on this?
The leader of the Islamic Revolution has stated that negotiating with the United States is neither honorable nor wise, and it truly is the case. The U.S. has proven that in negotiations, it resorts to any trick or deception and is solely focused on its own interest, intent on weakening the opposing side. Historical experience shows this clearly. Just look at how the United States, at its inception, made treaties with Native Americans and then unilaterally revoked them. The same pattern occurs with other countries as well. There is a humorous riddle about Washington's mischievous behavior in Latin America. Why do coups take place in Latin American countries but not in the U.S.? Because the U.S. has embassies in all those countries, but does not have one of its own. Wherever the U.S. has an embassy, there has been a coup or a conspiracy. This indicates that the U.S. is never seeking a common benefit. It is not interested in give and take or collaboration. Everything is for its own advantage at any cost.
After the Islamic Revolution in 1979, tensions escalated dramatically. The U.S. intensified its animosity, backing the brutal regime of Saddam Hussein during the Iran-Iraq War in the 1980s, freezing Iranian assets, imposing stringent sanctions, and engaging in military provocations. Washington even facilitated a series of targeted assassinations of Iranian nuclear scientists by Israel, resulting in the deaths of at least seven individuals. Mr. Modabber emphasized, "You don't negotiate with someone who has come to kill you," highlighting the gravity of the situation.
Why do Iranian officials avoid direct engagement with American officials?
من معتقدم باز تاکید میکنم امروز فضایی که از آمریکا خارج میشه اصلا مذاکره نیست.
I believe that today the signals coming from the United States are not those of negotiation, but rather those of submission. The U.S. is officially announcing its project of Libyaization of Iran and has deepened its coordination with the Zionist regime. Netanyahu has stated that today we have no closer ally in the White House than Trump, and he aims to pursue his so-called New Middle East plan. Therefore, if we still think we can negotiate with someone who believes in our complete disarmament, that is a grave mistake. What are we negotiating against? I believe that before everything else, we must clarify our stance with our allies. In fact, our relationship with allies like Russia and China is still ambiguous. If we deepen our relations with them and genuinely forge alliances with them, we can utilize their capacities to apply pressure on the U.S. Anything less than this is a major strategic error. I even believe that the biggest trap set by the European trio for the West-leading faction in Iran was to hold negotiations about Iran's nuclear program in the past few months without the presence of Russia and China. They aim to distance us from those two allies we have.
But perhaps the most shocking act came in January 2020 when the U.S. ordered the assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, Iran's top anti-terror commander and a highly respected figure across the world. Meanwhile, sanctions imposed by the U.S. have disproportionately impacted ordinary Iranians, choking off access to vital resources. During the COVID-19 pandemic, rather than easing the suffocating sanctions, the U.S. ramped them up, exacerbating the already dire humanitarian situation in Iran. This strategy starkly contrasts with Washington's self-proclaimed commitment to human rights, exemplifying how America's hostility extends beyond just high-ranking officials. It affects the entire Iranian nation. Mr. Qadiri Abiyane pointed out that U.S. sanctions, rather than achieving their intended goals, have ironically backfired.
So what should we do? Yes, we have problems. The leader mentioned a few years ago, lifting the sanctions is in the hands of the enemy, but neutralizing them is in our hands. Therefore, we need to focus on neutralizing the sanctions. Now they say these sanctions against us are backbreaking, but our backs haven't broken. While they have created challenges for us, Trump says he would make the problems worse. Yet we have made significant progress, even at the peak of these difficulties. The more severe the sanctions, the more we advanced. For example, we were sanctioned in missile technology, we were sanctioned in aircraft manufacturing, but we made progress. Indeed, we made significant advancements, even more than many countries that were not under sanctions.
We have a lot more to cover today, but first let's take a moment to catch up on the latest headlines.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
Hey,
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the news section of this program. Here we'll go over some important news headlines. Meh news. U.S. doesn't want negotiations, rather it wants surrender. President Masoud Pezeshkian has said that the United States doesn't seek negotiations with Iran and instead wants Iran to submit to its will. Speaking in a gathering of people in Bushehr province in southern Iran, the Iranian president questioned U.S. President Donald Trump's real intentions. We're not saying that we don't negotiate, but Trump can't impose all kinds of sanctions on us and then speak of negotiating. Why would he block food and water and medicine from us? Pezeshkian said. They are not after negotiations, he added. They want us to be submissive to them. But we won't be made submissive. The president said Iranians would be able to solve problems by relying on themselves and having a roadmap. Times of Israel. PM Trump said to discuss U.S. support for potential Israeli strike on Iran nuclear sites. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and U.S. President Donald Trump have discussed a variety of ways in which the U.S. could support Israel in a potential attack on Iran's nuclear program, the Washington Post reposted Friday amid a series of indications that Jerusalem could be planning a strike in the coming months in a bid to take down Tehran's regime. Citing Israeli and U.S. officials, senior Washington Post columnist David Ignatius asserted that unless diplomatic pressure forces Iran to abandon its nuclear facilities, Israel is prepared to destroy them with or without U.S. support. Israel wants to seize the moment, Ignatius wrote, citing American and Israeli officials. If Iran won't agree to a Libya-style abandonment of its nuclear facilities, Israel is prepared to bomb those facilities with or without U.S. support, the officials said. In contrast, CNN on Thursday cited Pentagon reports noting Israel would still need American assistance to destroy Iran's nuclear facilities, including mid-air refueling and the ordinances required to penetrate deep underground. CNN. Saudi Arabia seeks to mediate between Trump and Iran on new nuclear deal. Saudi Arabia is open to mediating between the Trump administration and Iran in pursuit of a new deal to limit Tehran's nuclear program, CNN has learned. It is unclear whether Saudi Arabia has made a formal offer, but the move underscores Riyadh's desire to build on its improved relations with its former foe and secure a seat at the negotiating table for a potential new deal. Saudi officials see the current regional landscape as a historic opportunity to de-escalate tensions with Iran and improve ties, insisting that they want no part in any American or Israeli confrontation with the country. Noor News. New plot against Iran behind the scenes of Grossi's remarks in Munich. In his recent statements, Rafael Grossi, the director general of the IAEA, emphasized that the opportunity for reaching an agreement with Iran is running out and Iran could soon produce the materials necessary to build a nuclear bomb. This warning, which seems more like part of efforts to intensify international pressure on Iran, not only fails to present a realistic picture of Iran's nuclear situation, but also appears to be a political tool aimed at legitimizing the hostile policies of U.S. President Donald Trump and his new executive order to reinstate the failed maximum pressure strategy. The key question is whether these new pressures can force Iran to change its policies or retreat. The reality is that the Islamic Republic of Iran has not only resisted foreign pressures, but is also seriously committed to maintaining its nuclear program within the framework of international agreements. And thank you for joining us in this section. Please do stay tuned for the main narrative.
The U.S. has a track record of disregarding global agreements and organizations, even those that are fundamentally humane in nature, such as the World Health Organization, the Paris Climate Agreement, the Open Skies Treaty, UNESCO, the United Nations Human Rights Council, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the North American Free Trade Agreement, and the United Nations Global Compact for Migration. Even promises made to close allies like Canada and European nations have fallen by the wayside. When we look beyond Iran-U.S. negotiations and examine other countries' experiences, it becomes abundantly clear why the U.S. has earned the title of a serial killer of international agreements. The Paris Climate Agreement is a case in point for this troubling trend. Initiated with much fanfare in 2015, this accord aimed to unite nations in combating climate change, a pressing global issue. However, the U.S. withdrawal in 2017 sent shockwaves through international diplomacy,
signaling a retreat from collective responsibility. Similarly, the United States' disengagement from the WHO during a global pandemic not only hampered efforts to combat COVID-19, but also diminished the U.S.'s credibility as a so-called leader in global health. The character of U.S. foreign policy can further be seen in treaties like the Open Skies Treaty and the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The former, a pivotal agreement for arms control and transparency among nations, lost its effectiveness following the U.S. decision to withdraw in 2020. The latter, intended to enhance trade among Pacific nations, suffered a fatal blow when the U.S. opted out, disrupting economic partnerships and cooperation. Such actions convey a message of uncredibility and unreliability that alienates even Washington's closest allies. Meanwhile, Mr. Akberi brought to light a particularly revealing point about the American mentality.
Mike Pompeo, the former U.S. Secretary of State, writes in his memoirs that we Americans consider theft, lies, and deceit among our accomplishments. Can we engage in negotiations with a country when its leaders take pride in such moral vices? The important point is that this unethical behavior of the Americans recognizes neither friends nor foes. They are always solely concerned with their own interests, no matter the cost, including trampling the rights and entitlements of the other party, whether that party is a friend or an enemy. Is it reasonable to negotiate with such a country and such individuals who hold these views? Is such a negotiation honorable?
Tehran's recent stance sends an unmistakable message to the White House. Iran will not bow to Washington's policies, nor will it shy away from responding decisively and appropriately to any aggressive actions. In fact, Iran's strategy in the face of these threats is not to negotiate from a position of weakness, but to bolster its internal capabilities and enhance its deterrence against any form of external pressure. Again, in his speech, Iran's leadership has stated that the solution to Iran's problems, especially economic problems, is not to negotiate with the U.S. And the reason for that is past experience. In your opinion, what is the solution, again, most notably regarding economic hardships in Iran?
We firmly believe that negotiating with the U.S. will not resolve any of our problems. I think that if we exert effort within our country and act according to the guidance of our leaders and scientists, we can stand firm against these sanctions. Look, negotiating with the U.S. will not help us at all. Why? Because they are not really seeking to solve our problems. Rather, they aim to impose their views upon us. The U.S. believes it can dictate its opinions to Iran. The U.S. has a history of about 300 years, while our history exceeds 3,000 years. Who said we must be subservient to them? Who said they should dictate terms for us and for the rest of the world?
In the midst of the complex American attitude, Iran's leadership stands firm, guided by the principles of dignity, wisdom, and expediency. They reject the idea of negotiating under pressure, recognizing that doing so would not only be irrational, but also a direct threat to Iran's sovereignty. That said, Tehran is still open to diplomatic discussions, provided they protect its national interests. While Iran remains committed to finding diplomatic solutions, it's also clear any aggression against its national security will trigger a resolute response. This is a nation that knows its strength and will defend it fiercely.
In the coming days, there will be a meeting of the prime ministers of the Caspian littoral states. These meetings should not be merely ceremonial or photo opportunities. We must have a concrete plan. We should elevate our trade exchanges with our neighbors. Any hope for negotiations with the U.S. is certainly contrary to the national interests of Iran. As our leader has stated, it is neither honorable nor wise. The enemy has explicitly declared that it will bombard us. Should we negotiate with someone making such threats, or should we show them our teeth, indicating that they do not possess the capability?
That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Until next time, take care.
Seven, they're in a pressure.
We come to you, and O God, knowing that thou art our only king.
You're listening to the program Bookshelf on Iran Radio with Sheikh Yasir, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajahum. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, dear listeners. Welcome to another episode of Bookshelf with me, Brother Yasir Ibrahim. One of the main sources for Islamic knowledge and for us as Muslims to actually become familiar with the teachings of Islam is the ahadith, the prophetic traditions that have reached us from the very different means by which it has. So one of the main means, obviously, that these traditions have reached us is through books that have compiled these narrations. Obviously, we know that one of the main books in the Shi'i school of thought is the book of Al-Kafi, written by Sheikh Kulaini Muhammad ibn Yaqub. But the question is this, is that regarding these traditions and regarding the means by which they have reached us, how do we know that these traditions are reliable? How do we know that they are valid? How do we know that we can act upon them? To answer these questions, the ulama and the scholars created and rather wrote certain books within the field known as hadith sciences or hadith studies, ulum al-hadith. And these sciences obviously have various branches. One of those branches is the study of rijal, which is the study of people. The others, or one of the other branches, is the study of diraya, or the understanding of the hadith from all different aspects, i.e. the whole chain of narration, the text of the hadith itself, and so on and so forth. The book that we would like to introduce to our dear listeners is one of the primary textbooks, early textbooks, that a student in the seminary will read. It is written by one of the contemporary ulama, and it is titled Narrators and Narrations. So please stay tuned for our next segment.
Why do we read books in the first place? What are books good for?
We read books because we don't want to reinvent the wheel, if you will.
We'd better take advantage of human cultural and intellectual heritage, particularly related to our daily activities, such as our physical, mental, spiritual, or even religious health.
We can't ignore the past thoughts and experiences. To do so, we need to boost our bookshelf.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to our program Bookshelf with me, Brother Yasir Ibrahim. So the book that we would like to introduce to our dear listeners is titled, the English title anyway, Narrators and Narrations, A Beginner's Guide to Rijal and Diraya. This book was written by Ayatollah Al-Uzma Sheikh Jafar Subhani, who was one of the leading ulama in the seminary of Qum. Rather, it can be said he's one of the leading ulama in the Islamic world. And it was translated by Brother Sheikh Zayd As-Salami, who many of you may have heard his name before. So this book was originally first published in 2018. It was published by ICAS Press, which is the publishing house of the Islamic College for Advanced Studies in London, the United Kingdom. So this book, as the title says, is a guidebook. It is actually the primary textbook, i.e. it is the beginner's textbook. So when a person enters into the Hawza or into the Islamic seminary and they begin the study of Hadith, one of the books that is required for them in order to actually advance and to progress in the studies of Hadith is this particular textbook of Ayatollah Jafar Subhani, Hafadhahullah. However, it is also worth mentioning that Ayatollah Subhani has two other textbooks that are more advanced than this textbook with regards to Diraya and Rijal. Those two textbooks obviously are later textbooks. This book that we have and we have introduced is a summary of those two textbooks. So, for example, if a person, a student, obviously wants to reach and better understand those two textbooks, they begin with this one. This book was originally written in Arabic and then translated into English for the benefit of an English-speaking audience. And therefore, it was also this book that was chosen because it is an introductory textbook. Therefore, it is not that difficult for others to also understand. So as we mentioned in our previous segment, there are two main sciences regarding ilm al-hadith or the sciences of hadith. One is ilm al-rijal. So ilm al-rijal is literally translated as the science of people or the discipline where you learn about people, but not just any people, i.e. those individuals who are mentioned in the chain of narration of the ahadith. For example, you see a particular person, for example, say his name is Ibn Ali, for example, and this particular person, is he a trustworthy person? Is he not a trustworthy person? And so on and so forth. This is what Rijal discusses, whether that particular person in narrating hadith and in his mannerisms, was he a trustworthy person or not? Diraya looks at the entire chain of narration. So one of the studies, obviously, is that when a hadith reached us, it went through a number of people. Obviously, the hadith coming from the Imam or from the Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam went through a group of people, a group of individuals, and it eventually reached a particular book where it was written in. So therefore, this particular science of diraya looks at the entire chain. That even if, for example, one person is unknown, one knows much who, is it possible to say that the hadith is authentic and valid or not? What are the rules behind it? What are the codes behind it? And so on and so forth. So this is the study of diraya. Also, diraya looks at the text of the hadith. For example, it may be so that the sanad, what is known as the chain of narration, be authentic. However, by certain elements within the text, we see that, you know, this hadith is lacking in authenticity because of these certain aspects that are missing or certain mishaps that we see within the text itself. And this particular textbook is in 34 lessons and it ends with a conclusion. It's also worth mentioning that this book is not the exact translation of the original Arabic, but it is a slightly abridged translation for the benefit of an English-speaking audience. So please stay tuned for our next segment, where we will be reading a part of this textbook for the benefit of our dear listeners. So please stay tuned.
Sacred texts we have received to help us understand where we came from and where we are going as a human race are most rich in helping us find our direction. They narrate stories of our past, but where have they brought us? Where are their messages now? Are we the people of belief, or have we become the people of the boxes? Is there wisdom trapped in our bookshelves? Bookshelves, bookshelves, bookshelves.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to our program Bookshelf with me, Brother Yasser Ibrahim. So the book that we have introduced to our dear listeners in this program was titled Narrators and Narrations, written by Ayatollah Al-Uzma Sheikh Jafar Subhani, Hafizahullah, may Allah protect him, and was translated by Brother Sheikh Zaid Al-Salami. So we'll be reading from page number 5, where it is obviously important for us to know the books that we'll be reading and books that are important in the subject. So the 5 principal Rijal books. During the era of the Imams, their companions compiled books on the science of the biography of narrators, but none of their books have reached us. However, there are principal Rijal books that were authored close to the era of the Imams, and they are 1. Rijal al-Kashi. This was authored by Muhammad ibn Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, known as al-Kashi, Watafata and Ashadda, Kashi, which is a known town on the outskirts of Samarkand. He is among the reliable and a scholar, well-versed in narrations and biography of narrators. He was the student of Abu al-Nasr Muhammad ibn Mas'ud, known as Al-Ayashi. Al-Ayashi has a very famous excerpt of the Holy Quran. Sheikh Atusi summarized this book, and what we have with us now is the summarized version called Ikhtiyaru Ma'rifa al-Rijal. The distinction of this book is that it concentrates on transmitting the narrations regarding certain narrators. The author categorized them, starting with the companions of the Prophet, and then the Imams, until the companions of Imam al-Askari, alayhi salam. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to enable us to have a better understanding of the narrations of the Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam and his family, and for us to act upon them and to implement them in our lives. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program Bookshelf on Iran Radio with Sheikh Yasser, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. U.S. President Donald Trump seeks compensation through a mineral resources deal from Ukraine for billions of dollars in wartime aid provided by his predecessor Joe Biden. Trump aims to secure rare earth minerals and oil from Ukraine. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Sky News has covered this story and tells us more. U.S. President Donald Trump has said that he wants the United States to get back money spent on aiding Ukraine during its ongoing conflict with Russia. Trump, on Saturday, 22nd of February, proposed a deal in which Ukraine would grant the U.S. access to its mineral and oil resources as compensation for the billions of dollars in wartime aid provided. He told delegates at the Conservative Political Action Committee, CPAC, in Maryland, he said, "I want them to give us something for all of the money that we put up. We're asking for rare earth and oil, anything we can get." Trump added, "We're going to get our money back because it's just not fair, and we will see, but I think we're pretty close to a deal, and we better be close because that has been a horrible situation." According to the Pentagon and Ukraine Oversight, the interagency group tasked with presenting reports to U.S. Congress, since February of 2022, the U.S. Congress has appropriated $183 billion for Ukraine, including more than $66 billion in security assistance. However, despite growing U.S. pressure, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has said that he is not ready to sign that would have granted U.S. companies 50% ownership of the country's mineral resources. Ukrainian officials have repeatedly said that the agreement is unilateral and Ukraine needs assurances from the United States first. Ukrainian officials said, in the form in which the draft is now, the president is not ready to accept. We are still trying to make changes and add constructiveness. U.S. Special Envoy to Ukraine and Russia, Keith Kellogg, who met President Zelensky recently, claimed the Ukrainian president understood signing a deal with the United States was critical. Donald Trump has intensified his criticisms of the Ukrainian leader, branding Volodymyr Zelensky as a dictator without elections, saying he has squandered opportunities for peace with Russia. Trump insisted that Ukraine had no grounds for complaint about its exclusion from the U.S.-Russia talks held in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, on 19th of February. He maintained that Ukraine's absence from the discussions between United States and Russia was a result of its failure to capitalize on earlier opportunities to broker a peace agreement with Russia. In response to years of military and political provocations by the United States and European countries, Russia began its special operations in Ukraine in February of 2022. Russia has managed to gain control of a fifth of Ukraine's territory and has been slowly advancing in the east of the country for months. Ukraine's military, supported by the United States and various European countries, grapples with manpower shortages and tries to hold on to a chunk of territory in western Russia. Russia has demanded an end to the West's military and political provocations on its borders and Ukraine's permanent neutrality under any peace deal. Iran's press TV has also covered this story and tells us more. Ukrainians are marking the third anniversary of their bloody and protracted war with Russia in the coming days, which is in reality a NATO-engineered proxy war with Moscow. During this period, hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian soldiers have been killed or injured, and more than 20% of Ukraine's territory has been taken over by the other party. The West has backed Ukraine with weapons and financial aid, having spent more than $500 billion on the protracted war with little results, as Russia continues to gain the upper hand. The United States has been Ukraine's biggest supporter, having contributed over $300 billion under the Joe Biden administration that prioritized war in Ukraine over domestic issues. However, the Donald Trump administration is unwilling to continue this costly military adventure. Donald Trump has accused Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky of being a dictator and criticizes the vast sums that Washington has spent on Ukraine over the past 3 years. Recently, Trump, a businessman at heart, introduced a new proposal for continued support to Ukraine. He wants Ukrainian minerals in exchange. According to reports, Washington is now pressuring the Kiev government to sign away billions of dollars in mineral wealth in exchange for ongoing military assistance. Ukraine possesses around 5% of the world's rare earth mineral deposits, and Donald Trump is demanding that Kiev sign over the rights to approximately $500 billion worth of these resources. President Volodymyr Zelensky has rejected the initial draft of the deal, insisting that he cannot sell his country. However, Trump's intentions are clear. He wants to loot Ukraine's mineral wealth, and he is not even hiding it. Imperialists have no shame, and they have never made a secret of that. We continue with Press TV's coverage of this story. The US regime dragged Ukraine into war with a powerful country, Russia, and the consequences have been devastating. Hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian soldiers have been killed in the futile war, and the country's infrastructure has been destroyed. The United States is not aiding Ukraine out of a commitment to freedom, democracy, or human rights. The genocidal imperialists of the West have abandoned those hollow excuses. The truth is that the West is at war with Russia, using Ukraine as a proxy. Ukrainians have become the scapegoats in a war orchestrated by the West with no regard for their well-being. It is a one-sided war, one that Ukraine cannot win. Historically, this is not the first time the United States has plundered another nation's resources. The United States and Belgium were complicit in the assassination of Patrice Lumumba to exploit Congo's mineral wealth. The United States was looting Iranian oil until 1979 Islamic Revolution ended that exploitation. In fact, the US regime has a long history of plundering weaker nations, particularly in Africa. Even today, the United States continues to plunder Saudi Arabia under the pretext of a protection racket, something that Donald Trump himself has publicly admitted. Looting Ukraine's minerals is not an anomaly, but a continuation of the American imperialist and hegemonic practices. While Ukrainian President Zelensky has publicly rejected Trump's demands, this may be more posturing. Ukraine is not strong enough to resist US pressure. It is entirely dependent on Western support. Donald Trump and the United States are driven by greed, and they will likely get their way in Ukraine. Only strong nations can withstand the pressure of Western imperialists and colonialists. No nation should remain under the grip of the evil Western hegemonic powers. These imperialists are ruthless and utterly devoid of any conscience. Every nation should strive to free itself from foreign domination.
Thank you.